Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to an In Theaters Now episode of Movie Mastery. I am John, over there is Jeff, and we are here to talk about the movies that you send us to go see, and this month, it was Black Panther.
Yay!
Thank you. Jesus God Almighty, you started out thinking you were going to send us to go see 50 Shades, and then I begged and pleaded with you like the pathetic heap of a man I am, and you decided to send us to see Black Panther instead.
So we went and saw 50 Shades Freed, and here we are to discuss it, right, John?
No. Good God, no.
So 50 Shades Freed is the story of two unlikable, I guess conventionally attractive rich people who have vanilla sex after pretending that they're going to use some BDSM things for 3 minutes at a time. The bad guy in this one is somehow tangentially connected to the dark past of the main husband character, but eventually he easily dispatches her because she's between him and yet another rich people set piece in which to have boring vanilla sex. John, any thoughts?
This is a bad bit. You're bad for doing it.
Oh, well, I thought you were going to help me out on this one.
I am not helping you, sir.
We didn't see it, although I guarantee you none of that was wrong.
Oh, yeah, no. I am 100% sure that that is correct. That's why it's not a great bit, because you can't make fun of 50 Shades anymore. You're like, hey, it's just, that's what it is. Guys, we already did an entire episode making fun of 50 Shades, and this is going to be more of the same.
There might be huge differences. What if it's got a crazy guest star you weren't expecting? What if Kevin Hart's in the movie?
Yeah, Kevin Hart just shows up and he's like, whoa, I gotta get out away from these white people.
Oh, geez, I am richer than all of you, but goddamn, I live in a regular house.
You guys are real weird and disgusting, and I gotta go.
All right, so, no, we didn't see that. We saw Black Panther. Fine.
Yeah, and coming into it, of course, I knew of Black Panther before this, you know, comic books, stuff like that. Never huge into the character, but he never really made it into a lot of the stupid shit that I like, which is, like, you know, exiles and weird Marvel space stuff. So, not exactly one of the characters that tends to show up, like, fighting Thanos.
I mean, the only thing I really knew about him before this was the famous story about how when he was originally introduced in the 70s, he was created by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. There was a complaint that there weren't enough white people in the comic, so the next arc they did had him beating up the KKK.
Yeah.
So that was, I knew that about him. I always thought that was amusing. I'm a little sad that this character exists in the Marvel universe, in the Marvel movie universe now, if only because that means he will never meet the Marvel Luke Cage. That's just sort of a bummer. Because people keep saying they're going to bring those Netflix characters up to the big leagues. They are not going to. It's silly to pretend they will.
I wish they would.
I mean, it would be great.
I wish they would for some of them.
Yeah, let's bring that Iron Fist on up to the big leagues, huh?
Ooh, baby,
oh,
no.
What a weird character. He's very unimpressive.
Oh, please do not give that guy a movie.
It took him 11 or 12 episodes to beat up David Wenham. Not with any powers or anything, just David Wenham.
There he is.
Take that, Faramir, he said.
He said to him.
I only played Faramir in a different and far superior property.
Oh no! I regret everything.
And as I die, I take with me the only part of this show that was worth watching. That's not true. That girl with the sword is rad. Anyway.
Man, he fell a long way.
Well, yeah, he was on the top of one of those super rich people buildings. Well, he slowed down on the way.
Yeah. He was on a bungee cord. He just kept coming back. By the way.
Another thing that makes you terrible.
I had another point to bring up.
How come there are only 2 weeks dedicated to choreography? I blame the showrunner who also made the last season of Dexter. David Buck should not be getting work.
Yeah, so Black Panther was real good. You know, no spoilers yet, but man, that's a good movie. I'm gonna go ahead and give you the warning now. We are obviously, because it is our brand, going to nitpick stupid things and make fun of stuff, but do not misunderstand us. This movie is great.
Oh yeah, it's a solid B- of a film. I'm gonna give it a...
It's a solid passing grade.
Yeah, absolutely. This would let this thing successfully take a driving test. I'm giving it a 68%, and that's a damn solid 68%. I'm just trying to pick fights with random people, John.
I'm just trying to make the internet hate me even more.
Hey, everyone, at me. Please at me about
that. Please, everyone, let the internet know that Jeff hates Black Panther.
Attention, readers of Kotaku and GameSpot. I am giving this a 7 out of 10.
Oh, no. Jeff, you can't do this. This is about ethics in games journalism.
You're right. I'm sorry. 9.4 out of 10.
Thank you.
And I will see you at you know,
I will
E3.
See you in court, sir.
See you at E3. All right. No, it's an awesome movie. It was fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely great. High recommend to go see in theaters.
Yeah, which means there's really not much for us to do here but dissect spoilers. So, spoiler alert, after this musical break, this is like all spoilers from that point forward. So if you haven't seen this yet, do not listen to the rest of this.
And I definitely recommend going to see it because it's real fucking good. If you're listening to this before you've seen the movie, man, go see the goddamn movie.
Yeah, don't listen to this.
Get out of here.
Go listen to one of our episodes that makes money. God.
All right, we will be right back after the music with a full review of The Black Panther.
Tell me what you gonna do to me. Confrontation ain't nothing new to me. You could bring a bullet, bring a sword, bring a morgue, but you can't bring the truth to me.
And we're back. It's time to get into it. It's time to dig deep into that Black Panther. It is
good.
Fucking good. It is time for you, the listener, to finally find out what two fat white nerds think about Black Panther.
Our voices are important in this matter.
It's good. You really need to know what we think.
First of all, it's really good despite having so many black people in it.
First of all, what's with all these black people?
Thank goodness they put in Martin Freeman as Everett K. Ross.
That's so the only thing I could identify with.
Every time he wasn't on screen, I was like, where's Frodo?
It's like, what's happening?
Oh, wait, I mean Bilbo. He's Bilbo. He's
where's,
not Frodo.
Where's Bilbo and Gollum?
Yeah. Where are the two white people in the movie, Bilbo and Gollum?
Yeah.
That aside, this is actually a phenomenal entry in the Marvel universe, which is especially nice because it doesn't, other than having Claw and Everett Ross in it, it doesn't really connect to the Marvel universe, which is awesome.
Oh, no. I mean, we get a very brief connection to the fact that this takes place almost immediately after Civil War.
Yeah.
Because when T'Challa is going back to Wakanda, it is for the funeral of his father. So It is very close after the events there.
Yeah. So this is almost immediately after Quill to a movie that happened a while ago. Other than that, there's very few occasional toss-off references to things occurring in the Marvel Universe. Notably, the coolest character in the movie makes a quick reference to Bucky at one point when she gets to say, oh, good, another broken white boy for me to fix. Which is just awesome. It starts with the Black Panther on board his really cool-looking African mask-shaped hovercraft super ship. And he's hanging out with the head of the Dora Milaje, who are the super cool all-female army that defends the Black Panther or the King of Wakanda, depending on whether or not those are the same person at the time.
Yeah.
And they are preparing to do an assault on a convoy of trucks. And they have some ultra rad looking like sand morphing technology that they're using to kind of plan their assault.
Yeah, the sand morph technology is a thing that shows up a lot in this movie, and I fucking love it. It's great.
It's not all that different. I mean, going all the way back to literally the year 2000, the first X-Men movie.
The year 2000.
That's when I'll make it up to you. What stupid Silverchair references.
Yeah. Silverchair! Here I am trying to reference late and early Conan O'Brien shit.
And here I am referencing pop bands you forgot about.
Oh, no one forgot about Silverchair. They've held them deep in their heart.
So it's kind of like the, because they use that kind of pushed up wire technology to do the exact same style of effect in X-Men in 2000.
Oh yeah, and I loved it then too, honestly. Yeah.
So it's just a way more advanced version of that that's done using vibranium sand, which is just rad looking.
The one nice thing about it though is it becomes physical. Like there's the that sand layout when they're looking at the convoy, and then T'Challa just picks up one of the cars off of it and looks at it and then puts it back.
He doesn't just do that. He sweeps the top off it so we can see what's in there.
Oh, yeah.
Little sand people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just walking in single file to hide their numbers.
I was about to say. Oh, that was weird that inside this truck was a bunch of fucking Tusken Raiders.
Well, it was a Star Wars reference. Sure, he's a huge nerd. So anyway, he's getting ready to launch an assault on a convoy of trucks, and Okoye, the leader of his Dora Milaje, is basically saying, "Hey, you're going to find her down there, so don't freeze when you do."
Yeah,
and he's like, "I will not. I'm not going to do his accent. What the fuck is wrong with me?
Why would you even try?"
I wouldn't. No, he's just like, "I won't freeze. Don't worry about it." And then he jumps out of the fucking plane, which is just rad.
Oh yeah,
everything he does is rad.
Everything is rad.
Yeah. If anything, there's one of the. I guess I could say this one early. If I could have any nitpicks about this movie, it's got a wicked case of everyone but the lead character is the coolest character. It's one of those problems where, like, you know, when you're playing your Super Mario Brothers 2, no one ever picks Mario. No one's ever like, oh boy, the guy who can jump pretty good. Dig.
The guy who's pretty good at everything.
Dig, pretty good. But you pick Luigi because he can jump forever, or the princess because she can friggin' fly. Or you pick Toad because Toad is the fucking man.
Toad is the fucking man.
Because he fucking rocks. No, I'm sorry. That's a song I used to sing every single time I played Super Mario 2 when I was 7. It has lyrics and everything. I don't know. It's stuck with me for 20 odd years now.
Way too long.
So, okay. Where was I? He jumps out of the plane, throws cool things that disable the truck's engines, hide in the trees. The colors are phenomenal. The tension is amazing. This is really good.
Oh, yeah. You know, the thing about Black Panther, as soon as he starts fighting people, though, is, man, he really needs a supervillain, because the second he's like, I'm going to fight these guys, and like, I will shoot you with this gun. It does not matter. I am the Black Panther. Go fuck yourself.
It doesn't even knock him back a little bit or anything.
No.
He's just, he's that kind of bulletproof that you usually reserve for Superman.
Well, yeah, because that's the nice thing about vibranium is like, oh, not only is it a ridiculously hard metal, it absorbs vibrations, so getting shot does not matter.
Yeah, so you're right. He really does need a supervillain right away, because otherwise he's just bulletproof and Vinso, and it's just not that interesting to watch him beat up thugs.
Yeah, because the second he's like, I'm going to stop skulking around and like beating you in stealth, and he's like, I'm just going to walk up to you and punch you in the face, you're like, oh yeah, that's right. He can just clown on fools.
Yeah, it's just remarkable. But of course, he has the same weakness as Superman, which is hostages. So some dude pulls a hostage, and let's see, at that point...
Okoye
shows up and takes out that dude. But his ex-girlfriend, Nakia, has also shown up.
Yeah, and that's why he didn't get that last thug, is because he froze.
Yeah, he froze. A thug got a hostage, and he was just like, ooh, Nakia, I'm super into this. And who wouldn't be? I mean, goddamn, it's Lupita Nyong'o. I mean, get out of here. She won every genetic lottery.
Nah, man. I'm way more into Okoye in this movie.
Are you?
I don't know. I don't know why it is, but she can fucking get it.
I'm not disagreeing.
I'm pretty
with
sure
you.
This entire movie can get it.
There's literally no one in this movie can't get it. I mean, even gross old Andy Serkis with one arm is still surviving on residual can get itness, radiating off the rest of this movie. This might be the first movie since Fast Times at Ridgemont High where Forrest Whitaker can get it. I mean, everyone in this movie looks phenomenal.
Oh, it's great. Top to bottom, everyone's great.
The outfits are all amazing. Anyway, the rescue is a success, thanks to, you know, Okoye jumping out of a fucking plane without a Black Panther suit on.
Yeah. I'm like, I don't know what you did. I don't know if you landed that somewhere or what you did, but man, good for you.
Oh, she's so rad. So anyway, then the three of them go back. They have to fly to Wakanda because they're in like Nairobi or something when this happens.
Yeah, you did skip over the actual beginning, though, which is the main thing, because it's why there is a plot in this movie.
Oh, sure. You want to go through that? Fire away, my friend.
Yeah,
take it.
1992 in Oakland.
Yeah.
Which is where this opens up, and you're like, huh, that's an interesting choice for Black Panther.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's 1992 in Oakland. Salt and Peppa and Heavy D are in a limousine.
Yeah. They are in a limousine together. Shooting craps.
It's a completely unexpected beginning to this.
And then the camera pulls back and never visits them again.
Yeah,
don't
and then
know
we
why
go-
it did it.
Then we go to a rap attack with Mr. Magic Molly Mall.
So we get some kids playing basketball outside of the school, and then a couple of guys who are up to no good start making trouble in their neighborhood.
I mean, I don't know if those guys are actually up to no good, but what happens is it looks like UFOs fly through the clouds.
Yeah, and we cut to there are a couple guys in an apartment somewhere who are talking about they've got guns, they're gonna be doing some like, I don't know if it was specifically like a bank robbery or something like that.
They were planning a job.
There was a job. job.
And they were using the parlance of Oakland at the time. For example, when a knock came at the door, an instruction came from one to the other to hide the straps.
Indeed.
So they were not immediately apparently Wakandan.
There's a couple Grace Jones looking ladies out here.
Which is a killer line.
Yeah.
It's a couple of Grace Jones looking chicks outside the door. And well, the other guy's just like, whoa, let them in.
They're not going to knock twice.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, he should have been like, sweet, if even one of them is Grace Jones, it's a good idea to open that door.
if there is even a 1% possibility that is true, we have to take that as a
we have to talk to her about Conan movies. Get her in here now.
Let me ask you about anything.
Grace Jones, I have a million questions. You are an amazing giant monster of a woman, and I love you.
So in come the
Some Dora Milaje
and T'Chaka back when he was the Black Panther.
Yeah, he was Black Panther back in 92, and he looks rad as hell as the Black Panther. His outfit's a little more old fashioned than the Black Panther of this film.
Yeah, it's he's got like
a
drape on him as well, which is a nice little throwback to back when the Black Panther had a full on cape going on.
That is true. And for a long time in the history of Marvel Comics, the Black Panther has had way too much cape.
He had like straight Dracula cape going on.
Yeah, he's like this, I'm an unbelievably acrobatic super ninja, but I need a bigger cape than Doctor Strange. Let's get it done.
Oh, yeah. If my collar does not go above my panther ears, yeah, I will be very sad.
I need some of those like mid-90s Batman cape hook things that pop up around the collar.
Yeah, I mean, he is one demon deal away from having Spawn cape.
Your Highness, Wakanda is about to go completely bankrupt after spending so much money on cape starch.
We've spent so much on capes. Please help me budget this. Spend less money on capes.
$1,000 for heart-shaped herb. $3,000 on cool gold necklace teeth. $1 billion on cape starch.
Spend less money on cape starch.
No.
Yeah, it's real good. So he shows up. Turns out that one of the guys here is actually his brother, a prince of Wakanda,
mm-hmm,
but he was sent out to be a spy.
Yeah, he's spying on 90s Oakland.
Yeah.
I don't know what he's doing exactly there, but...
Well, basically having information on the world.
I guess. I don't really know what was... I mean, maybe he's spying on the Raiders? I don't know.
Oh, yeah. He's there to stop the Raider Nation.
That's what it is.
Wakanda is always worried about war with the Raider Nation.
We need guns to destabilize the nation of the Raiders. And the people back in Wakanda are like, damn, a whole nation of Raiders? That sounds scary.
Damn.
And then, you know, the people in Oakland are like, you have no idea.
You don't even know.
Get your shit together. Because when the Raider Nation comes a-calling, they're going to ruin your city and not spend a dollar on tourism stuff.
Ha! Yeah, take that, people who like the Raiders.
Not even people who like the Raiders now that they're moving to Vegas.
That's true.
It used to be that they were just the scourge of California and everyone outside of Oakland hated them. Now everyone hates them.
Yay. It's spreading like a disease.
I wish I had the energy in me to hate the Raiders still. I don't, because the Chargers left. Now I hate the Chargers.
Now I don't hate anything.
I'm too busy hating the Chargers, and that's been San Diego football politics.
San Diego football politics.
You won't get a shirt and you'll cry. Okay, so...
And it turns out that in addition to this, he has stolen some vibranium.
Yes, and he's kind of got a plan. His plan has been to arm repressed people.
Yeah.
He just says it is repressed people, but the basic idea is that he's trying to push civil rights agenda through some terrorism methods.
Yeah.
And this is not sitting well with T'Chaka, who's like, nah, dude, you can't do that. Also, you stole vibranium, so you're going to come back to Wakanda and report your crimes.
And the big thing is, when he did it, he used it with the help of Claw. So that was also the deaths that Claw caused that we sort of heard about a little bit before in...
Age of Ultron?
The Civil War.
Oh, and Civil War, yes.
Are because of him, mm-hmm, as well. And his buddy that is there, it also turns out, is a spy that is spying on the spy, and that is...
It's Wakandans all the way down. You can't fool me.
Yeah, and that is a past version of Forrest Whitaker, which, ooh, baby, 25 years later, he is going to get... real messed up.
It's amazing how 25 years was so unkind to Uncle James.
Yeah, man.
Because he looks like a normal dude, and then 25 years later, he looks like old Forrest Whitaker.
You're like, huh.
Who I'm sure just looks perfectly normal, but I've never seen a movie where they don't just completely plaster him in CGI and makeup.
They're like, we need to do some weird stuff with you, Forrest Whitaker. And he's like, all right.
Whatever you need to do. You want to turn me into a distaff Darth... I guess it'd be a female Darth Vader. You want me to turn me into a weird Darth Vader almost? Okay, Rogue One, you got it. Ooh, a Cyclo? Yeah, I can do that. Let's go. Come on, Battlefield Earth.
Let's do it. I got things to do.
Fuck up Forrest Whitaker. This movie, he looks awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's in really cool purple robes, and he has great, like, face paint and stuff. He looks amazing as Zuri. But, you know, he doesn't look all that much like Uncle James.
No.
So, anyway, the dude, the brother of T'Chaka gets super mad about the spy thing and goes to kill Uncle James.
Yeah, and then that forces T'Chaka's hand quite literally into his chest.
Yes, and so he kills him. And then the two ships fly away, and the kids down on the basketball court look on because they are totally seeing UFOs.
Yeah.
It's amazing how early, like, Wakanda had its Quinjet game together.
Oh, yeah.
Because 92, they were already flying around in super cool secret stealth hover ships.
Yep.
They're on shit. This is amazing.
Yeah, no. I mean, 25 years ago, they definitely had Inviso ships.
I think one of my favorite things about that whole scene is that everyone's been all hyped because Captain Marvel is going to be set in the 90s. It's going to be set sometime around 94, 95.
Yeah.
And then here along comes this movie. And it's like, no, you don't get to be the first cool Avenger. T'Chaka was already running around in Oakland before you got your suit. Screw you. I'm claiming everything. I am Ryan Coogler.
This is mine, and this is mine.
I'll take that, too. I'll take everything. Oh, active in America in the 90s? Yeah, we were doing that, too.
Don't worry about it. We got this.
I love it.
They rescue Nakia and...
Well, they don't really rescue her because she wasn't really in danger.
No.
They just get her.
She was a plant.
Yeah. They just get her. And then they go back to the funeral and upcoming coronation of the new king of Wakanda.
Indeed.
And we get to meet the queen mother, who's Angela Bassett and who looks phenomenal.
Yep.
And
we get to meet the best character in here.
Letitia Wright's Shuri, far and away the best Disney princess of all time immediately.
Oh, yeah. She is the greatest. And I want to take a moment to talk about one of the things I absolutely love about this movie that you don't get a lot in superhero movies, which is that there are actually family and friends in it.
Oh, yeah. No, not just...
I mean, like, you look at your Batmans, your Spider-Mans, your Captain's America, and they're like, oh, what are you? I am a lone hero. Maybe I'll have, like, a teammate or a friend or something, but I have no family. I don't really have a place that I can go to. I am a tortured hero. Like, even Spider-Man's like, I've got Aunt May, but mostly my life is trying to keep Aunt May in the dark and my parents are dead.
Yes. Normally, if they introduce additional brothers or sisters, it's so that they can become dark mirror villains.
Oh, yeah. Family almost invariably for most superheroes ends up being either a liability or a villain.
Yeah. But in this movie, it's a support network and it's amazing.
Oh, yeah. And they all have different roles to fill, and just the whole fact that, like, T'Challa can come off of Civil War being the most competent badass in there and just be like, oh my god, fucking Iron Man, Captain America, get your shit together, Jesus Christ. And then show up in this movie and get clowned on socially by his little sister. I'm like, this is amazing. I love everything about this.
My favorite thing about Shuri, or at least about Letitia Wright, the actor who plays Shuri, is that she's actually from French Guiana. So she's of a stock... Oh, she, I'm sorry, she's from British Guiana. So she's of a stock of African people who, in an African diaspora, ended up in South America, and you know, mostly through escaping slavery and so on. But it's one of the things I love so much about this Wakanda is that it pulls influences from so many different places.
Oh yeah,
and it shows up in her look all the way across the board. Is like, this is a person who is, you know, African but not African. It's amazing.
Yeah,
it's really, really cool, and it keeps going like that. But she's just one of my favorite parts of it by far.
Oh,
plus
yeah.
She's super modern, while everyone else is mostly wearing kind of Afrofuturism style robes and clothing. She's like, no, I'm wearing a neoprene vest.
Oh yeah.
Screw
she's
it.
Like, yo, I'm in a t-shirt because I don't care.
Yeah.
And, you know, just straight flipping people off.
Yeah, no, she's just, I could gush about how awesome Shuri is forever, but the internet's been already doing that for me, so.
Oh, yeah.
It's just, she's great. She's just great.
So, we got to get to the coronation of our new king, where they have the contest where if anybody wants to, any of the leaders of the various tribes that make up the nation of Wakanda want to say, yeah, we're gonna try and get the throne from you, they can do that.
Yeah, and it looks like, this is an awesome scene. They like drain a waterfall so they can all go out and stand on the cliff next to the waterfall.
Yeah,
it looks kind of dangerous.
Oh, definitely.
But otherwise, I mean, it's just gorgeous. it looks like the there's five tribes that make up Wakanda, and they all tell us all about this in a cool cartoon at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
But each one of them appears to be like one kind of old person who's the tribal leader, and then they're combat champion. Because in this scene, they're like, the whatever tribe, the ones who do the farming, do you wish to challenge? And it cuts to like an older woman and her rad dude holding like cool double dagger things, and they're like, no, we're good.
Yeah, we're okay.
No, we're fine. What about you, green tribe with the dude who's got the super crazy lip plate? Do you guys wish to challenge? And he's got like a random champion with him. No, we're good.
Nah.
Yeah.
Yeah, everyone's like, nah, we're good. You can go ahead and be king. Except here come the Jabari.
So the Jabari tribe, this is the coolest thing about this movie. But, I mean, I'm going to say that a million times. The Jabari tribe is actually a regular thing in the Black Panther comics, and they are led by one of the biggest villains of Black Panther, like ongoing villains. It's pretty much Killmonger, Claw, and this guy. And he's in this movie, and he is, instead of being a terribly named, very racist character that's a villain that everyone thinks is the embarrassing part of Marvel's history, he's like the Han Solo of this movie, and he's so good.
He is amazing. Like, honestly, I have a hard time saying whether or not him or Shuri is my favorite character in this, because I love both of them.
Even coming down to the actors, both of them are relatively new actors, and they're both phenomenal in this. So that's Letitia Wright and Winston Duke are just so good. So Winston Duke is playing M'Baku, the leader of the Jabari tribe, who you'd remember in Marvel Comics as the mighty man-ape.
Fucking man-ape. The fact that they were like, yo, it's time to have a Black Panther movie. Here comes man-ape. And I was like, please don't. For the love of God, do not. And never once does the term man-ape get said, which is good.
No, they completely redefine. Well, they redefine all the villains in this. Because Killmonger is completely rebuilt from the ground up. Claw is not a man made of sound.
Yeah. It is a very much reworked world for him to be in, but still very good.
But so the Jabari tribe arrive late to the coronation, and M'Baku challenges.
Yeah, he's like, yo, I won't be king. Fuck you.
Yeah, so he just beats the ever-loving hell out of Black Panther for a couple of minutes. But then Black Panther, in maybe one of the trite things in the movie, is like, oh, screw you, I'm going to win because my family's cheering for me.
Yay.
Yeah, and so he kind of gets him in a cool lock and hangs him over the edge of the cliff, and he's like, hey, don't make me kill you.
Come on, man, don't make me do this. Your tribe needs you.
Yeah, so eventually he taps out, and they leave.
Yeah.
And now we have, and before any of this fighting happened, he had to drink a magic fluid that took away his Black Panther powers.
Yeah.
And then he has to go have them again. And it turns out every time you get your Black Panther powers put into you by drinking the heart-shaped herb juice, you have a vision quest.
Yeah, and so he gets to go into a rad purple sky, starry savanna where his dad and a bunch of panthers are.
Like the previous Black Panthers from before T'Chaka.
Yeah.
They're all hanging out in a tree, and then they have this incredibly good conversation, including bringing back the guy who played T'Chaka back in Civil War.
Yeah.
And he has the greatest couple of lines. The any father who hasn't prepared their children for his death has already failed as a father.
Yeah.
It's all very well done. Yeah. He's even like, I don't think you're going to be a very good king. You are too nice to be a king.
Yeah, it is difficult for a good man to be king.
Yeah, it's awesome. Also awesome, by the way, we just passed over it. When M'Baku challenges, he mentions that he's going to have the fight for Hanuman, or in glory of Hanuman.
Yep.
That's awesome. So first of all, most of the folks, like the Black Panther family, they're worshiping Bast, the Egyptian cat god, who, you know, is African.
Yeah.
North African, sure, but African. Hanuman is a Hindu monkey god.
Yep.
I love that.
They're like, yes, at some point, Indian traders came down. They were like, hey, we've got a god who is a monkey that fucking loves strength and wrestling and being loyal and good. And they're like, sold.
Dude, religious syncretism is the best. He fits right into a slot we had.
Here we go. Hanuman it is.
So they're just fully on board with Hanuman. That's the coolest thing. So anyway, Black Panther has this vision quest. Talks to his dad, comes back out. Now he's Black Panther. Has a mission that he wants to do to go catch Claw.
Yeah. Now, fucking Wakabi is...
Oh, we gotta talk about Wakabi, yeah.
Wakabi, as soon as T'Challa's like, I am now a king, Wakabi is one of the leaders of the tribe that is it seems basically like they're ranchers plus their army.
They're kind of like the Maasai and the Zulu at the same time.
Yeah.
They're ranchers, but instead of ranching just goats and oxen, they also ranch rhinos.
Yes.
And then they are also the primary military, or the war dogs, as they call themselves.
Indeed.
Of Wakanda. And he's a little grumpy about it, because raising a standing army is great and all, but when no one's ever found your country in 5,000 years, and you never do anything with any other country, it's kind of a...
Yeah, you're kind of like, why am I even here? You make me get an entire army, we train all of these soldiers, we have the best technology in the world, we could do pretty much whatever we want.
And yet we are strictly isolationist.
Yeah, I am stuck hanging out here, not doing anything with what I can do.
We don't even get to guard the Pope like the cool Swiss dudes with the halberds. I mean, come on, let me get something.
Let me guard the Pope.
Gah, it's our turn for Pope guarding.
Let me go steal the Pope and then guard the Pope.
Look, those guys worship Hanuman, you worship Bast, we worship the Pope.
Weird, right?
We're Catholic. Doesn't come up in the film, but you know, very true.
So he's like, he's got a couple complaints. One is, I would like to do something. I would want to take, you know, my war dogs, go out into the world and do some good with them.
Mm-hmm.
The other is, so Claw.
Claw's been running around for 30 years and no one likes it.
He straight murdered my parents when they stole that vibranium. So, how about some justice?
How about you go get me Claw? And Black Panther's like, I will either bring you his body or him in custody.
Yeah.
And so he's mollified for now. Another fun thing about him is that he is Okoye's boyfriend in this movie.
Yes. We don't really know if they're married or just lovers or what it is.
They get a lot of my love and stuff like that. But to be fair, we don't know if marriage is a thing in Wakanda. It doesn't come up.
Nothing comes up.
Yeah. So anyway, he plans a plan to go find Claw.
Yeah, he planned a plan in times gone by.
But the reason he thinks he's got Claw on radar, by the way, great, I appreciate it.
Thank you.
The reason he thinks he's got Claw on is because he's popped up on their radar when, here we get our introduction to the villains in the movie, when Eric Killmonger is at some art museum. And this might be one of the few bits of the film that's confusing for the sake of let's get the plot moving.
Nah, fuck it. I love it.
So,
I don't care.
So Eric Killmonger, who looks amazing, even in his civvies,
yep,
is at some art museum, and we get it's some fake British art museum. I assume because the real British art museum was like,
nah,
no, we won't let you kill a bunch of people in our museum.
We would not like a scene of terrorism to take place in an actual museum.
Or more importantly, for, you know, Killmonger to be asking extremely pointed questions about who made all this art that you have in here.
Yeah.
Like, hey,
all this stuff you have, who did you take that from?
Yeah. But so he's hanging around in some art museum with a bunch of security guards near him, and then we get a lot of shots of a severe-looking woman in high heels walking his way.
Yeah, and I mean, just to begin with, that is, again, a very powerful shot of like, yeah, it's just some black guy minding his own business, but boy are all of the security guards looking at him.
Yeah, but eventually this woman gets to him, and she's like the expert on African ceremonial objects in this museum. And he's like, hey, they tell me you're the expert on all this. And she's like, yes, I am. And she's like, great. Or he says, great, what's that? What's that? What's this thing? Where'd that thing come from? And to me, it's like, what is this meeting? That's the one question I have, is what's happening? Is he here in an expert capacity? Did he buy his way in here? What's happening? Because it seems like he's just some dude at the museum. Why is he getting a private tour from the lady who's the big expert?
It would appear, as far as I can tell, because they don't really give you a lot of background on the shit that's going on here, like, he set up the meeting with her to begin with.
Oh, way in advance.
Otherwise, there's no way she would be showing up here.
He has a henchman in this scene who is also his girlfriend, who is working in the museum at a coffee stand.
Yeah, which means this has been planned for a while, because she had to have gotten the job there.
Yeah. Yeah, which is weird, because there's absolutely no reason that she needed that job, because the place was full of other employees and not employees, but like attendees and stuff. And it was like, she could have been anywhere.
Yeah, but that was the only way that they were going to give her some poison.
Yeah, that's true. That's right. She sold her the poison coffee.
Exactly.
Thank you for reminding me about that. I forgot.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Okay. But it's super minor. I'm just like, what the heck is the situation that caused this meeting to come into play? Because from the moment he starts asking questions, she should be like, nothing you're asking makes any sense. Because he's not asking expert questions. He's like, what's this thing? Hey, what's that? What's that do? Where's that from? But eventually he asks her where some kind of ads is from. And she's like, that's from
the Daily Mail. Those are the ads there.
No, it's ADZE.
I know.
I'm sorry, I'm referencing obscure types of weapons.
It's a hook weapon.
It's a big old metal hooky. You could also call it a crowbill, I guess.
Yeah, sure.
But anyway, he asks her where it's from. She says some African country, and he's like, nah, that's Wakandan.
Yeah, you took it from there, but it's from Wakanda.
Yeah. And then at that point, she's like, oh, well, I'm going to call security because you seem awfully
threatening.
Yeah,
he was like, I'm going to take that.
I'm going to take that. She's like, I'm calling security. And he's like, I poisoned your coffee.
Oh, man. So angry about everything going around, but you don't even care what's going in your body. You're dead. Goodbye. Yeah.
So she dies, and then Claw comes walking in and starts killing people, and this is great. Andy Serkis in this movie is so great.
I love Claw as a villain because he is one of those villains that's just on board with what is happening 100% all of the time.
He is super cheerful. He does not have a dark secret or an agenda or anything.
He is unflappable and is just like, hey man, look, I killed everyone else, but you security guard, you can go free. It's fine. Run along.
Yeah.
And the guy goes running and he shoots him in the back. And even fucking Michael B. Jordan, Killmonger, is like, dude, why didn't you just kill him? And he's like, oh, I wanted to spread the crime scene out. Make it look like amateurs. Anyway,
he's so nice with the answer. He's not even like, you beginner, we have to make it look like amateurs did this. And instead, he's like, oh, I like doing that. Great sandwiches. I'm not sure he did with his Australian accent, when he clearly is doing an amazing Joburg accent.
Yeah, he is very South African. He is not fucking Monterey Jack.
Jeez.
Vibranium.
Why'd you kill him way over there?
Well, Zipper, let me tell ya.
No, he's doing a near-perfect Joburg accent.
Yeah.
Also, he's cheerfully only got one arm because Ultron took it off a few years ago.
But it's been replaced by a
big
prosthetic
plastic arm
that is fully functional as a regular hand, but also can turn into a sonic blaster.
Yeah. Oh, dude, he's so great in this movie. So they steal a bunch of stuff from the building. Basically just that chunk of vibranium, because that's all they really cared about.
Yeah, that weapon had a vibranium head to it, and then
a random mask.
And a mask. Because he's feeling it.
Because he's feeling it, which is awesome.
Yeah.
So the two of them run to this van. Killmonger immediately starts making out with his girlfriend, and even that, Claw comes into the van, and the two of them are making out. He's like, ha, awesome. And he just turns around again.
Yeah, he's like, I love it. Great.
I love everything about it.
I'm on board no matter what.
He is just happy.
He's happy to be here.
He's a great villain. And then they escape. So it turns out that Claw is planning to sell that chunk of vibranium
to the CIA.
The highest bidder, who turned out to be the CIA or whatever. Yeah. And so they're going to do it at some super secret, ultra luxurious
underground casino.
Yeah, South Korean casino. But news has spread to Wakanda, and so a mission will be planned.
Indeed. So they're going to go try and get Claw.
Yeah, which is our great chance to, first of all, we get to see the awesome scene of Shuri outfitting T'Challa with his new equipment.
Oh, yeah.
In just an amazing Q talking to Bond scene, which is made amazing because Shuri is so great.
Yeah, it's like if Q had a great personality.
Exactly. I mean, when he was John Cleese, he absolutely did.
Yeah.
But otherwise, this is just phenomenal. She makes him some shoes that don't make any noise.
Yeah.
And then a couple of new necklaces that are the various Black Panther outfits, where the entire outfit fits in the necklace.
Yeah, so that way it's like, you don't have to like take the helmet off or anything.
Yeah.
It's just part of what you are wearing.
Mm-hmm. And also introduces one of the most important technological gimmicks in the film, which is that modern-day Black Panther suits store kinetic energy when kicked or punched or shot at, and then can release it in bursts.
Yeah, so because vibranium can just absorb any vibrations or anything that happens, she's essentially turned that into a vibration storage unit for kinetic energy.
Yeah.
So the point where it's like, great, you can do that, and then just make a big explosion.
But the scene's awesome because she tricks him with it.
Yeah.
And gets him to kick it twice, which flips him over while she films it. So it's fantastic. She's a great character. Shuri is great.
Yeah.
And he tells her that when she asks who's going on the mission with you, he's like, oh, I'm taking Nakia and Okoye. And she's like, aw. And he's like, also, you're going to be here as my support staff. And she's like, yes. Which is just so good. So, you know, they raid this casino dressed in their finery, including Okoye having to wear a wig, which is adorable.
Just like, oh, this is the worst.
Having hair is stupid.
It's dumb and I hate it.
And they get in there and things go south, and the Everett K. Ross or Martin Freeman is in there.
Yeah, he's the one who's going to be the buyer, and he has a briefcase full of diamonds, apparently, that they're going to trade for that vibranium.
Yeah, for the vibranium chunk that Claw's hiding in his underwear. We also get a really awesome bit of business about how Claw is definitely working on an album and trying to get Martin Freeman to take the SoundCloud link.
Oh, yeah, because Freeman's like, makes an offhand joke about getting Claw's mixtape, and he's like, oh no, actually, I've got a SoundCloud link, let me send it to you. He's like, no, I don't care.
I love that, because it's a reference to Claw's backstory in the comics.
Yeah, it's so good.
It's so well thought
and
out.
And it's, again, one of those moments where Claw unflappably on board with everything.
Oh yeah, the moment he's like, you seem to be traveling with a huge posse, when's your mixtape dropping? And he was like, oh, actually, in about a month, do we have the SoundCloud link? Let's get him the SoundCloud link. And I was like, oh, that's awesome, because he's a sound villain most of
the time. Good.
Normally, Claw's whole power set is ridiculous. He is a man with an arm cannon made out of sound who is a foil to the Black Panther because a sound doesn't work on the vibranium suit.
Yeah.
And he's like really important to the original Secret Wars.
Yeah, very strange.
Yeah.
Very strange shit.
Bizarrely minor character with a hilarious backstory. So well adapted. Anyway, it all fucks into a fight. And everyone's fighting everyone. It's a really cool, swoopy, one camera shot.
Oh, yeah. Some amazing work on there. It leads into one of the better car chase scenes that I've seen, especially with Okoye, has some serious amazing moments, both in the fight in the casino and in there.
I know you wanted to talk about the colors here in the casino fight scene as well.
Oh, yeah. Well, you may have seen this, but Coogler himself had a little video of explaining the fight scene and how he did stuff, and just the United African flag is black, red, and green, and so Black Panther, Okoye, and Nakia are in black, red, and green,
mm-hmm.
and then the color blue is sort of representing colonizers,
mm-hmm.
so Claw is in a blue vest in here, but also later on in the movie, Martin Freeman is going to be with them in Wakanda, and they have to, like, flee, and they're all in various, like, blankets running away, and he's the one who gets the blue one.
Yeah, and the one tribe that's represented with the color blue is the one that wants to go out into the world and fuck shit up.
Yeah, the war dogs are the ones who are like, oh, we want to go out and, like, actually expand Wakanda, and they're the ones who are in blue.
It's so, yeah. But then there's car scene. The scene where Okoye gets pissed off about how they're wasting their time shooting bullets at their vibranium car, and so she climbs out on the roof and stops their car with a spear.
Like, chucks a spear through their windshield, it lands in the ground in front of them, and then because it's vibranium, they can't drive through it, so it just smashes the car. Like, this is fucking amazing.
It's super cool. I mean, granted, it wouldn't work that way because the ground there wasn't made of vibranium. They just push over a chunk of concrete, but it was still unbelievably cool.
So good.
And then, finally, Claw gets pissed off at them and shoots their car with an arm cannon.
Yeah, and the sound from it, while it doesn't destroy the vibranium, just sort of breaks it into its component pieces.
Yeah, so the whole car comes apart, and you get Okoye doing this amazing spear of flying door and use it as a sled moment.
Yeah.
Followed by Nakia doing that skate in on the seat part left over from the car.
Yep.
It's just, oh, it's so good.
Everything in this is real good.
The scene where Panther grabs a car, spears the ground, and uses his hand as a anchor point for a hard bootleg turn.
Yes.
It's just amazing. It's a really good car chase.
It is an amazing car chase scene.
I was watching the Red Letter Media review of this, and they called it a pointless car chase because those two guys hate fun and good times.
Yeah.
And it's not pointless because it's fucking rad.
Oh, yeah. It's the point where you get to really show off, especially for Okoye and Nakia, what they can do outside of just being next to the Black Panther.
Hell, it's specifically not pointless because it sets up Shuri's ability to drive cars remotely via that sand display system they have. Because the Black Panther's on a car, he's not driving it, he's sitting on top, and she's driving it back in Wakanda.
Yeah, he just throws a little device onto the car that then allows remote control of it.
Yeah, so we set up that she can do that because that's essential to the end of the film.
Yes.
So anyway, they eventually catch Claw.
Indeed.
Mm-hmm. And they don't kill him on sight because there's a bunch of onlookers. Instead, they lock him up and
Agent Everett's like, oh, I gotta ask him some questions first.
Yeah, and T'Challa's like, all right, diplomacy, fine. But it's amusing to me how little of a shit T'Challa really gives about Everett. He's just like, yeah, fine, you can talk to him for a few minutes and then we're taking him to Wakanda. And they're like, no, that's not how custody exchanges work. Yeah, I don't care about that, though.
Yeah, no, but I am, though.
But we are, though. He is coming to Wakanda.
I don't think you understand. I'm letting you ask some questions, and then we're taking him.
At best, I am bemused right now.
I am going to allow it because you're a decent fellow.
Yeah.
And that's about it.
Yeah. Anyway, Ross asks him some questions, but fucking Andy Serkis at the top of his lungs in his awesome South Africa accent is singing What Is Love. Anyway, he doesn't get much out of him other than him revealing that Wakanda is actually a super advanced hyper nation, which Ross didn't know.
Yep.
No one knows. Only Claw knows.
Yeah.
And then Killmonger breaks him out.
Yep.
And Killmonger's breakout's amazing because he breaks a wall, starts throwing grenades in there, and nearly kills everybody.
Yeah. We get a great, you know, Black Panther jumping on a grenade because he's like, oh, I'm in a vibranium suit. Great. That'll contain it.
Yeah.
And it's just a nice little scene.
But also at the same time, Ross jumps in front of Nakia to take a chunk of grenade shrapnel, and he is about to die.
Yeah.
And they decide that the best thing they can do with him is take him on a 7-hour flight to Central Africa.
Yep. Well, he got shot in the spine, so.
Yeah. Those folks, the three of them, have absolutely no trust in non-Wakandan medicine. And why should they?
Which, fair.
Yeah. But,
last time someone had a fucked up spine, they ended up, I don't know, creating a Doctor Strange. You don't want any more of them.
I don't know. When was the last time someone had a fucked up spine? I think it's Rhodey. If you dig through the various Marvel characters.
Yeah, Rhodey had been taken to Wakanda instead.
Which he should have been. And he does end up there. He's definitely in the trailers for Infinity War. He is in Wakanda.
Yeah.
Because they took...
He's like, you mean you could have just healed my spine? God damn it.
Oh, yeah. He's super pissed off at Panther. But Panther was on the other side. No, wait. He was on the same side in that fight.
Oh, yeah.
What a douche. Well, maybe that's why he's in Wakanda.
Well, yeah, because it was, this is now he's king, so he gets to kind of decide what to
do.
Yeah,
that's true. I mean, ultimately, when you watch that Civil War, Infinity War shot, it's every black superhero they've ever had, plus a few others that are hanging around in Wakanda, because I'm sure that they really, really wanted to have some of those conversations take place. And
yeah.
So, I mean, if they want to put Falcon and Rhodey in Wakanda, I am 100% for it.
Yes.
Anyway, they take Everett back to Shuri to have her fix him up, because she's every kind of doctor.
But what we also see is the ring that Killmonger has as sort of a necklace,
mm-hmm.
is the ring that his dad was wearing, because his dad was I can't remember the actual name of him, but the Prince of Wakanda.
I want to say I know it, but if I'm wrong, I think it was Njobu, but I really don't want to be wrong with a name like that, because it'll sound like I'm making something up.
Lol.
But I think but don't take my word on that. I think that's right.
Yeah. So he's got that ring, and of course, T'Challa's like, whoa, why the fuck does that random dude have a Wakanda royalty ring?
Yeah, this is important, because it sets up what might be the only bad part of the film.
Yeah, they, when they get back with fucking Everett to fix his spine,
mm-hmm.
Wakabi is just like, man, you failed. Your dad didn't catch claw for 30 years, and I thought you would be different. And he's like, motherfucker, it is my third day on the job. I don't know what's going on here.
This whole scene is, this is a traditional and standard idiot plot moment. Because what happens is they're getting Ross all squared away with his spine or whatever, and then Wakabi shows up, and they don't want Wakabi to know that they brought some white dude into Wakanda. So just Black Panther goes to talk to him, and the two of them have a quick conversation. What John says happens exactly. He says, like, you didn't bring back Claw. Your father failed for 30 years, and now you failed, and I feel like you're just a total failure. What the hell? And Black Panther says, he slipped through our fingers.
Yeah.
Which is not the right thing to say.
Which is also not, I mean, technically accurate, but if you go, dude, we actually did catch him, and then he was broken out by a dude that probably knows about Wakanda because he had a fucking Wakandan ring.
All you needed to say here was he was taken from custody. We had him in custody. He was kidnapped from us by dangerous mercenaries who threw a grenade at your lover.
Yeah.
I made a decision to save lives instead of bring back Claw. So either I could have jumped on the grenade he threw so it didn't kill Okoye, or I could have gone and caught the dude. So
yeah.
I made the choice where your wife's still alive. Fuck you.
You're welcome.
What can I say except you're welcome?
Yeah.
But instead he just says, he slipped through our fingers. I am king. Quit asking me questions.
Yeah.
Which is a traditional idiot plot. And it's a traditional Marvel idiot plot particularly, where the reason that they don't answer the actual question is because they outrank the person asking. Just an ounce of prevention, buddy. Anyway, Wakabi's super pissed about this, so he goes back to his farm village to brood, and wouldn't you know it, Claw shows up, dead, in a bag,
dragged by
Killmonger.
We have a scene before that where Killmonger's like, we're gonna go to Wakanda, and Claw's like, no, we're not.
So he kills all of Claw's dudes, and then Claw responds by grabbing Killmonger's girlfriend and holding a gun to her head, and Killmonger just kills her immediately.
Yeah, he's just like,
bam. Pow. And then probably also kills Claw. John has a theory that he didn't...
I have a theory, because we never see him actually shoot Claw, and when he drops the body off, all we see is his head from a bag, and I'm like, okay, but
I mean,
don't
I would
see
I
that
would
he's dead.
100% love for Claw to be alive still, and I've seen a lot of discussion on the internet about it, people saying that, oh no, it was the right time for him to die, because what are you going to do with him now? His story's over. I will tell you what you're going to do with him now. There's going to come a day when you need to make an Avengers movie that has like 15 old ex-villains in it all standing there and being like, we're the Legion of Masters of Doom Evil. And the more of them you can keep around, even if they don't have to have super important arcs for that scene, the better.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the problem with movies being like, oh, our villain is done, and now he is dead. I'm like, you don't
have to
kill every single villain.
Yeah, I mean, think about who's left at this point. It's Baron Zemo, Justin Hammer, and Abomination still kicking around. And Vulture, if you want to count Sony movies.
Yeah.
There's just not enough of them. There's not even enough to start up a Thunderbolts.
No. I mean, that's... I'm very glad that Vulture survived, because...
Don't kill Spider-Man villains.
Spider-Man villains should not be killed, in the same way that, like...
Batman villains shouldn't,
and they always end up dead anyway, and I'm like, fucking stop it.
Yeah, because the best thing about Batman and Spider-Man, and I also throw the Flash in this pile, isn't them, it's their villains.
Oh, yeah, the Rogues Gallery is all that matters about them.
Yeah, and so the best thing you can do with them is that scene where... The almost got him scene from Batman is one of my favorite moments in any
Batman walking through Arkham and just having all of the various villains that are there.
But the almost got him scene where it's just like the Penguin and the Joker and Killer Croc and a few other villains are all sitting around going like, well, I almost got him once. I hit him with an acid pie. And then, you know, like Killer Croc's like, I threw a big rock at him. It was a really big rock. It's like, that's the kind of thing you can't do if every time you introduce a villain, you kill them by the end of the film.
Yeah.
So, anyway, Claw's probably dead, but who knows? We can just hope, because Andy Serkis...
I'm just gonna hope that they took his body and were doing something, and then he turns into sound somehow.
The one thing about him is, even if they kill off Andy Serkis's Claw, he is de facto mocap man. He'll show up when they need, like, a Fin Fang Foom or a Bi Beast or something. He'll be back.
Yeah.
You can't keep a good Andy Serkis down.
Yeah, I know. I just want him to be able to do mocap for Claw when Claw is sound.
Me too. Maybe Thanos will just be like, hey, a dead guy in Central Africa would be really useful to my cause.
I'm gonna go ahead and use, I don't know, the Reality Stone or something and be like, man, you're sound guy now.
Probably the Soul Stone, right? Because at this point, it seems pretty likely that Thanos just starts with it.
Yeah, it's possible.
There's no movies left between now and Infinity War, so unless...
The only other thing I was thinking of is that the Soul Stone is what the heart-shaped herb grows because of.
It would make sense because Wakanda
takes you on a weird soul journey when you take it.
Yeah, and Wakanda appears to be one of the places where they're being invaded.
Yeah.
So if he's going after the Soul Stone, which is in that meteor, that would make sense. Although Coogler, like, made a specific point of saying, no, the Soul Stone's not in my movie. It's not in my plans.
This movie does not have anything to do with the Infinity War. There is no mention of it, not in the post-credits scene, mid-credits scene, nothing. They are not going to be like, oh yeah, we're turning this Black Panther movie into also shilling for the next movie.
It's not Infinity War Part Zero.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Plus, purple's the wrong color for the Soul Stone. It should be orange. I mean, based on, not based on the comics, but based on what's going on
what's
in the movie
left.
So far. Yeah, because purple's already out there. It's the power gem.
Yeah.
All right. So anyway, we got to push this along. We're
oh, wait. I know.
So, okay, let's go.
So Killmonger shows up and with Claw, and his big plan is, I'm going to be king now because technically I have royal blood, so I can challenge T'Challa for the throne, which he does so, and...
This is the biggest idiot plot part two, because he comes in and he's like, hey guys, I killed Claw, and so Wakabi there's on my side because I killed Claw. And Panther doesn't just go, oh, Wakabi, this is the dude who kidnapped Claw from us.
Yeah, we had him, and then this dude tried to kill us and then stole him.
Yeah, so he tried to kill your wife pretty good and then stole him away. So any credit you're giving him right now for killing Claw is really more like he made an assault on your king and your wife and then also killed Claw.
Yeah.
So, you know, go ahead and factor that into your calculations.
Just so you know.
Yeah.
Just so you know. But no, never mentions it, never gets brought up.
No, he just immediately defects, which only makes sense if he was looking for an excuse to defect, which I think he was.
Yeah, I mean, Wakabe could have used a little bit more screen time of just figuring out that he does want to actually do the plan that Killmonger has, which is basically global terrorism to...
It's upright. He's trying to create a black diaspora.
Yeah, well, I mean, there has been one. He's just trying to do an uprising.
Yeah, he's trying to create a black diaspora with AR-15s.
Yeah.
Or rather, spears that can blow up tanks.
Yes.
Yeah, there we go. Okay, so Wakabe, by the way, is, I don't know, there's so many characters in this movie that are huge standouts, and he's like maybe my least favorite, because his big scenes of like thinking about, am I going to betray my king or not, are all met with a sort of bored half smile that looks like he's farting in a pool.
Yeah, he doesn't get a lot of emotional stuff, and the thing is, his, like, after this, when, you know, Killmonger becomes the new king and becomes a Black Panther and has a suit and the heart-shaped urban, whatever, there's a point where T'Challa comes back after they think he's dead, and they're like, okay, and now we're gonna have the actual fight, because the fight for who's the king didn't end.
Yeah.
And he's like, nah, man, go attack that guy. And Wakabe doesn't question it at all. He's just like, yeah, fuck it, Civil War sounds good, let's do it.
Well, yeah, it just sort of lingers on his face for 5 seconds, but
there's no tension, like, there's no thinking about it. He's just like,
okay,
yeah, fuck it, let's go.
All right, Civil War,
yeah, fine, sure,
yeah,
let's do that.
It I don't know. Anyway, that is what happens. Killmonger shows up, is like, hey bitches, I am tactically royalty, and I claim challenge for the throne. And then they fight, and he wins.
Yeah.
And he throws the depowered Black Panther off a waterfall, and he disappears.
Yes, indeed. So, you know, the family tries to escape, so Okoye stays behind, but...
Yeah, because she's loyal to the throne
of
Wakanda.
The throne, rather than T'Challa. Yeah.
But everyone else, like Angela Bassett and Shuri and Nakia all escape, and they take Everett Ross with them, which Lord knows they need to.
Yeah, and they head out to Jabari Land.
Mm-hmm. And then they meet with...
I love Jabari Land.
Oh,
that's
it's
a
super
great place.
Oh my god, it looks so good.
It is an awesome, like, embedded into the mountain area.
Yeah, with crazy giant vibranium gorilla statues. And
I don't think that's vibranium.
You think it's
I think
just
that's
mountain?
Just stone.
It could be. It looks like they don't have access to vibranium technology.
That was one of my big questions, was do the Jabari also have vibranium and they are super technologically advanced? Because by all accounts, when we see them, they don't appear to be?
I think they do. I think their clubs are laced with it and stuff like that. I think they just use it in lesser ways.
Yeah, I mean, it's not important to the plot that they do or don't, but it was just a question I had. I was like, huh, are they in on this whole thing, or are they just completely separate?
All I want to say is that their architecture is gorgeous.
Oh, yeah.
So he takes an audience with them. They offer him a single stolen heart-shaped herb, the last one, because wisely, Killmonger burned all the ones after he ate them.
Yeah.
He doesn't care who's king next.
No, he's like, no, fuck it. No one will be able to challenge me. There's no more of this. I will be superpower guy. No one else gets to
be. But Nakia manages to steal a single one. They offer it to M'Baku because he was a pretty credible challenger to the throne last time. And he's like, huh, all right, well, I'm not taking it because I actually have the still alive Black Panther in another room. But the conversation they have is phenomenal because Ross keeps trying to talk to him.
Yeah, and when he's like, look, you are going to shut the fuck up.
Look, colonizer.
Or we will eat you.
But the part where he's barking at him, he's like, hi, I'm Everett. We're going to eat you. I will feed your flesh to my children.
I'm just kidding. We're vegetarian.
It's so good. He is so good in that role. It turns out that they're doing the whole keeping Black Panther on ice in a coma.
Yeah, literally on ice.
Yeah. But they feed him heart-shaped herb and bury him in snow, and he has a second vision with his dad.
Also, I got to say, the vision that fucking Killmonger has is amazing.
Oh, it is so messed up.
Because,
first of all, Killmonger is still a child in his visions.
Well, yeah. Instead of going to this beautiful savannah like T'Challa did, he goes back to the apartment from when he was a kid in Oakland.
Yeah.
And you still have that purple sky,
mm-hmm.
but it's outside, whereas he is inside this building.
And he's still a child, showing that he's not ready to be the king and all. The symbolism in Killmonger's vision is perfect.
Oh, yeah. And when he does turn back into an adult, he goes from a kid that can't show emotion into an adult that is crying, and you're like, man, this whole thing's amazing.
Yeah.
His dad trying to sort of talk him out of what he's going to do.
Like, his ghost dad is like, oh, no, my plan already failed. What you're doing right now is insane. This is my fault. I thought I failed myself, but it turns out I failed everyone because of you.
Yeah, I fucked up, and I'm sorry. Please don't fuck up in my stead.
And here's the thing. What he's specifically saying is, I did not correctly prepare you for my death.
Yes.
Which is a direct connection to the first vision quest, and it could not be smarter.
Oh, yeah. It's so good.
Yeah. So, anyway, then we get the second Black Panther vision quest, where his father's like, it's time for you to come and be dead, and Black Panther challenges his father instead. He's like, no, this is your fault. If you had come home and said, I killed my own brother because he tried to kill a person.
If you had brought the child and woman with you instead of just killing your brother and leaving them in Oakland.
And then swearing Zuri to secrecy.
Yeah.
Who, by the way, he's dead now because in the big fight between Black Panther and Killmonger, he just goes like, oh, I'm also going to kill you, Uncle James, and just spears him.
Yeah.
It's so good. But so he challenges his father. He's like, Father, you failed. You failed Wakanda by keeping secrets for no reason.
Yeah. You fucked up and...
I'm going to go fix it.
I'm going to do this.
Yeah. Anyway,
we get our final climactic fight between the two Black Panthers as well as...
Oh, there's everyone's running around doing everything.
A civil war happening where, like...
The Dora Milaje are fighting...
Dora Milaje and the... whatever the blue tribe was. The blue ones.
Yeah, Wakabi's tribe.
Yeah.
And then they're all fighting, and Everett Ross is using Shuri's cool technology to fly a hover ship to shoot down drones full of weapons that are flying out to various people.
Yep.
So there's a whole bunch of stuff going on. They get Nakia into a Dora Milaje outfit, even though she's not one, and she starts fighting with rad energy rings.
Oh, yeah. She's got, like, energy chakram and fucking... Shuri has, like, panther blasters, yeah, and
she looks like a Thundercat.
It's so good. I'm like, yes, yes, use your weird Thundercat technology.
It's sad that it only gets to knock out two random scrubs and then just completely fail to work on the Killmonger Black Panther suit, but she looks so great.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, so she's running around with, like, the sort of guns that Panthro would use. Meanwhile, the two Black Panthers are having a rad fight. Oh, and we also get to watch Okoye lead a group of Dora Milaje in a four women versus Black Panther fight that's awesome.
Yep.
Because they fight as, like, a cool team, and they keep setting each other up for jump attacks and stuff.
Oh, yeah. The all of the fight choreography here, very well done.
Yeah, and then even featuring an 11th hour return of the Jabari tribe who show up to start fucking shit up, too.
Yep.
Which is straight up a M'Baku play to be better off. Because at first, Black Panther was like, hey, M'Baku, please send your tribe to help us. And he's like, nah, I'm not doing that.
I'm not. I have saved your life because you saved my life.
We're even.
I am not going to endanger my people, though, for you.
But because he shows up at the 11th hour like this of his own accord and not because it was a command from the King of Wakanda, he is basically buying favor to get himself a seat on the council.
Yeah,
and sure enough, in the last scene,
we see when they show, like, oh, T'Challa's coming back in, and it opens the doors to that council room, there's M'Baku just being like, yeah, I'm also here now.
Yeah, no, he did this, he played this exactly right.
Yeah. I mean, the Jabari were separate from the rest of the Wakandans for so long that you're like, oh, now they get to be, like, part of the fold.
Yeah. And there's a fight where various train energies, literally energy that powers maglev trains and a huge vibranium mine, is strong enough to weaken the Black Panther suits so that the two Black Panther suits from, you know, Killmonger and T'Challa aren't just harmlessly wailing away on each other.
Yeah, because otherwise you'd be like, all right, Black Panther punches a different Black Panther and it does nothing, and then this continues like that.
So it ends up with Killmonger getting stabbed with his own sword through a hole in his armor.
Yep.
And then he has an amazing final speech because T'Challa shows enough mercy to get him up to watch a sunset,
because that was the whole thing where his dad kept telling him how sunsets in Wakanda were the most beautiful thing ever.
And so he gets him up there and he's looking and he's like, wow, that is the most beautiful sunset ever. And T'Challa's like, you know, we could probably save your life. And he's like, nah, man, I don't want to spend the rest of my life in prison.
Bury me in the water where the escaped slaves died, because they knew, like I do, that it's better to be dead than in bondage. And I was like, fuck.
That is a killer final line.
Like, to as the last thing for your villain to be like, oh no, the hero showed mercy on me, and it's not the final line where the villain goes, oh, I finally see that I was wrong, or oh, I fucked up, or whatever. He is straight up like, no, I'm still correct. You go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
Wakanda should have been out there for our brothers and sisters.
Yeah. You're still failing. And the thing is, he ultimately wins at the end of this movie. Not in the way he wanted to, which was to burn it all down, but in the way of getting Wakanda to, you know, accept global responsibility.
Wakanda finally comes out of hiding and is like, yo, everybody, it's time to actually do what we should.
Yeah. I've seen a lot of people basically making the claim that Killmonger is like the first Marvel villain you agree with, which I'm not sure I actually do, because I feel like his method is incorrect. Like, ultimately, it's hard to forget that in the middle of this movie, without a blink, he kills his own girlfriend.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he is definitely a very psychologically fucked up...
He is a murderer. There is no getting around it. Yeah.
I mean, that's his whole thing, is he's like, oh, I've got... every time I've killed someone, he has one of these...
He does ritual scarification.
The scarifications, and it's his entire body is covered in that shit.
Yeah, he has thousands of confirmed kills, because he's been like a military dude for his whole life. But yeah, there's a lot of people like, oh, he's definitely the good guy. I'm like, no, he's fundamentally correct that Wakanda can't stay in the shadows forever, and needs to come out, and has a responsibility to the rest of humanity. But ultimately, he is a psycho murderer.
Oh, yeah. But
there's no getting around it.
I mean, it's very... true to being like, yeah, this is the reaction of someone that has felt that they have been left behind and oppressed. And so it's not so much like, oh, Killmonger is right. It's Killmonger's emotions are correct. His methods are not.
Yeah, that's fair enough. But his death is perfect. It's very well done.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we end with everyone in Wakanda happy because they won the big thing. And M'Baku gets a seat on the council. T'Challa is managing to convince Nakia to not run around in the rest of Africa being a mercenary, but instead stay here because he's going to open the borders and take in refugees and send out aid.
Because her whole thing was, I don't want to just stay safe in Wakanda. I want to help people.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, fine. Fuck it then.
We'll do it. We'll open it up. And then we get two post-credit scenes. One of them is T'Challa finishing his father's speech from the beginning of Civil War.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. I mean, it's pretty much just the exact same speech T'Chaka was about to give, and it ends with some smug asshole being like, no offense to you, the king of Wakanda, but what the hell does a nation of farmers have to offer to anybody? To me, I was like, how big is Wakanda? Because the answer's food, motherfucker. I thought a lot of people were running low on that.
Yeah, I mean, a nation of farmers can probably offer some food.
Food? Textiles? Chemicals? All kinds of cool shit. Did you forget that you eat food from farms?
Yeah.
But, you know, instead of, you know, him, you know, correctly pointing out that farmers are really important, he just smiles smugly because he's like, well, we have vibranium technology, duh.
Well, because we're the most advanced people on the planet.
Yeah. Which I still just kind of wish he'd been like, look, we are the most advanced people on the planet, and what we're going to provide you with is hover technology and crazy shit like that. But let's be real here. Don't be fucking mean to farmers.
Jesus Christ, come on, man.
Did you eat breakfast this morning? It was made of food.
Well, joke's on you. I did eat breakfast, but it was made of not food.
I had Soylent. I have Soylent for every meal because I'm one of those weirdos.
I'm one of those guys.
How many meals a day can I replace with Soylent? Is it three and then have a pizza? Sweet.
I'm healthy.
So healthy. And then our second post-credit scene, which is the return of Bucky.
Yay.
Bucky is sleeping in a little beautiful Wakandan village where small children are calling him the name of one of Black Panther's allies. White Tiger is a White Wolf, which is what they call him, is a Black Panther comics character.
Ah.
I don't remember if he's a brother, but he's somehow related, and he is the leader of the, I'm not going to say that, it's the Zorazut Milaje or something like that, which is another military arm.
Okay.
He's a sometimes ally, sometimes enemy type.
Uh-huh.
I don't think they're trying to turn him into that. I think it's just a reference to the character.
Because they're like, we have no plans to use that,
yeah.
So we may as well throw that in as an Easter egg.
I mean, we were talking about this earlier, but I think John and I have already determined who is the best possible villain for Black Panther 2. And it's not Manape, even though M'Baku's around and he's still pretty, you know, plotty. No, we think M'Baku's right where he needs to be. The best villain ever for Black Panther 2, Dr. Doom.
Oh, Dr. Doom needs to show up because now they have the rights to him. And it's like, let's have one technologically advanced nation versus another. But it's sort of Latveria's the evil mirror universe Wakanda where it's like, oh, yeah, we took our technological advanced nonsense and I use it to become a ridiculous dictator. And all my people are forced into wearing lederhosen for some reason.
Yeah, I treat everyone like ass, but I've raised a huge army of Doombots built by my random civilization slaves who sing my praises in their songs each day. Also, I toot as I please.
Doom toots as he pleases.
And he pleases as he toots. I mean, think about how great that would, because also that would really open it up for all of these amazing new characters that this movie gave us, you know, and Shuri and Nakia and Okoye and M'Baku. All those characters would still have something to do because Dr. Doom's not just one villain.
Oh no, he's a wizard that's also a super genius that also runs a country as a dictator. That I'm like, okay, so you've got another evil king for a straight up like villain fight for mm-hmm. Black Panther, but you also have crazy super tech for Shuri to deal with. You've got a whole bunch of Doom bots and whatever for like the Jabari and
whatever
like,
Wakabi's tribe
Wakabi
is
doing.
Yeah,
so you've got things that everyone there could fight against,
yeah.
And it would be amazing.
Yeah, screw having him be the random enemy to the boring Fantastic Four. The Fantastic Four are proven failures. Drop them like hot rocks, but bring Dr. Doom in as a Black Panther villain.
Yeah, Do it.
Do it. It's the best idea. It's the only idea. You could give Doom one throwaway line where he's like, after I'm done with you, I will begin my campaign against Richards.
Who?
Don't worry about it.
You never heard of him. He's underground.
Actually,
I'm hipster Dr. Doom.
Actually, I killed him 20 years ago. Don't worry about it. We're just not going to bring him up. So there you have it. So there you go. That's the movie.
There it is. So what we are going to do is go ahead and give our best and worst. Jeff, give me the best thing in this movie.
Man, don't make me do that. I don't know what the best thing in this movie is.
What is the single scene that you liked the best in this?
Shuri giving Nakia equipment and then running out and shooting people with her panther hands.
Okay,
so
that's fair.
Basically, every Shuri scene is my favorite scene in this movie because she is the greatest introduction to Marvel in forever.
Oh, yeah.
So definitely, probably the scene where she gets to beat ass with her cool glovey things, but then the scene where she's queuing out Black Panther with gizmos is so far and away a highlight in this film for me.
Okay. Okay.
So, just Shuri. Yeah. What about you?
God, I really am torn.
I was going to say Okoye.
I mean, Okoye, as I said, god damn.
So good.
God damn. But I think I want to say my favorite is when they go to essentially be supplicants to M'Baku.
The Jabari tribe, yeah.
And that entire scene from like when they meet him back to getting T'Challa is so well done and gives you so much character work for M'Baku in such a little amount of time that I'm like, I thought this was so goddamn well
done. I mean,
done.
We didn't even talk about the part where once they've got Black Panther up and standing again and he's in there talking to them and like, don't worry, we will defeat them. And they're all talking, oh, we're going to work together and defeat them and so on. And then it cuts to M'Baku, who's been sitting in his throne the whole time. He's just like, are you finished? Seriously, are you finished? You've been talking for like 15 minutes.
Yeah, he's so good, and I fucking love him.
Yeah, M'Baku, an amazing standout. The transformation of a character from being, I'm the great savage of Africa, the man-ape, to this is phenomenal.
It is an amazing character redemption from what he was.
And just like with Letitia Wright, I love the actor behind M'Baku, Winston Duke. He put out a blog post like yesterday about how the kinetic energy that they use as the core theme in this film, about how the two main character or the two hero and the villain are both based around the idea that they can take a beating and then rebound it outwards.
Yeah.
And all of their strength is derived from the perils that they've undertaken previously. And isn't that an amazing analogy to what a movie about black power is?
Yes.
I was like, dude, Winston Duke, where are you coming from?
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Go ahead and give me your least favorite thing in the movie.
It's the idiot plot between Wakabi and Black Panther. The scene where there's two scenes in this movie where Black Panther could have been like, hey, let's defuse this entire plot. If I just said more than five words.
Yeah.
Even though we're going on a long walk down a hallway, I'd rather be stoic and kingly than just, you know, solve the next 20 minutes.
Okay.
So that's it for me. It's not that I think the movie should have been solved. Like, I like the flow and the arc of this movie.
Obviously.
But really, the answer is that they needed a better transition between these.
Well, the fact that they had to rely on that.
What they needed instead was for Wakabi to be looking for an excuse to defect.
Yeah, on board already without having to use that as sort of the way that he gets on board.
Because we meet Wakabi before that scene, and he is completely on board with T'Challa instead. He's like, oh, you're my oldest friend. We've been friends forever. I support you in all your endeavors.
All I really want is for you to do what your dad couldn't. I'm not angry at you. I'm not showing that I'm going to defect.
Instead of the movie relying on one moment of characters not saying things when they're given the opportunity to do so, it would have been way better for Wakabi to have more of an agenda in the first place.
Yeah.
And that's my least favorite thing, and it's minor. What about you?
I kind of want to also go with that. I mean, as I mentioned before, that moment where he decides that he's going to have his own troops attack T'Challa and then also the Dor Milaje, I was like, that should seem like more of a painful choice, especially given that
his wife leads the Dor Milaje, is
in that.
Yeah.
I'm like, it just seemed like he didn't care, and I don't know if that was a directorial choice, if that was the actor, if it was what was going on there, but I was just like, that could have been given a little more weight.
I mean, it would work if they basically were trying to convey that tribe, the tribe with the blue outfits and the cool shields, were super stoic and didn't show a lot of emotion.
Yeah.
But he's the only member of that tribe who has a name or a line, so it's not like we really are going to find that out.
No.
So ultimately, it feels like his actions don't have a lot of emotional weight or thought behind them, and it's just sort of a disappointment, because the actor's fine.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, if he's the main character from Get Out, which was fucking amazing, so...
Yeah, and there's even a hilarious scene where he's charging, you know, T'Challa on a rhino, and then Okoye steps in front of it, but and of course the rhino's known Okoye since it was a baby rhino, so it stops and licks her.
Yeah.
And then she's like, are you gonna kill me? And he's like, no, I'll surrender instead, and it's fine.
But I love that when he's like, would you kill me? And she's like, for Wakanda, yes.
That's right. He's, yeah, would you kill me? And she's like, for Wakanda, unequivocally. I would kill you immediately.
Yeah.
I would kill you for the wok part of Wakanda.
And he's like, ah, fuck, all right.
I surrender. So there you go. It's a you're right. He was good and left in Get Out. It's just sort of an unfortunate scene.
Yeah. All right. We're going to give our ratings out of 10, 1 to 5 for, or 0 to 5 for each of us, though I don't think the 0 matters. So we're going to get our rating of 10 for both of us. Jeff, 0 to 5.
Oh, this is a 5. I mean, normally all the complaining about the Wakabi stuff doesn't, it falls apart in comparison to how good the movie is overall. It's a minor nibble
a little nibble.
It's a little nibble.
It's
a minor nitpick that feels expanded upon because we have to talk about what our least favorite scene in the movie is to do these reviews.
Yeah.
I didn't really care about it all that much when I was watching the movie. The movie's phenomenal. It was great from start to finish. I'm giving it a 5.
Yeah. I'm going to go ahead and give it a 5 as well. It was fucking amazing. Absolutely love it. One of the best movies that I have seen in a while. Definitely one of the best Marvel ones for sure. It is got a great hero, great supporting cast, great villain. Everything was well done. So yeah, 10 out of 10. Fucking Black Panther can get it.
Sure can. It was phenomenal. I look forward to it probably winning costuming Oscars.
Probably.
It's going to just do like Suicide Squad did a few years ago and win an Oscar. But this time I'll feel like instead of being like, well, how the fuck did this get any Oscars at all? I'll be like, this didn't get the correct number of Oscars.
Exactly. I was like, oh, you nominated this for the safe Oscars. This should be for the good Oscars.
Yup. So what it's going to win instead is like every MTV movie award.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Do they still do those?
They do. Ugh. I know that they do. I have not watched one in probably like 15 years, but God knows I still occasionally hear about it.
Yeah.
When they're like, oh, Best Kiss. And I'm like, thanks. I'm glad you have this as a category.
And it's like always a joke. Like, the Best Kiss is always like, oh, it's that scene where Chewbacca gets a porg near his mouth.
Good.
Yeah. All right.
So there you go. There was our review of Black Panther. And, of course, we've got so much other stuff going on. We will be back in 2 weeks with another Movie Mastery. But if you want to suggest something for us to watch, you can go on to our Reddit, r/System Mastery. We've got our big list on there. You can make a suggestion, get it onto there. And at the beginning of the month, I also put up the poll for In Theaters Now. So in a couple weeks, we'll have that up. And you can vote what we will see in March. And we've got all of our many, many other shows that we do. We do the System Mastery. We do the Expounded Universe. We do bonus content for both of those if you subscribe to our Patreon.
Patreon.com/System Mastery.
Yeah, if you like what we do, even if you only listen to this and you want to support us, go to the System Mastery Patreon.
Patreon.com/System Mastery.
And we will accept anything you want. Do you want to give us a dollar? We would love a dollar. Mm-hmm. Do you want to just go over there and leave a comment that says, these guys are amazing. That would be great. Do that on iTunes, though, because that'll help us more.
I don't know if you can leave comments on Patreon like that.
Sure, you can.
You can. It just won't help.
Yeah. So
what I always like telling people is go to your favorite message boards and talk about us there.
Yeah, your favorite message boards. Do you go to a message board for cheese aficionados? Mention us.
Yeah. We have a whole thing called Cheese Dudes that we used to do, and we haven't done them forever.
Come on.
Come on down to Cheese Dudes.
Come on down and recommend us to literally anyone you could possibly imagine.
Well, because I feel like that's the best. People always say, oh, go on iTunes and give us a 5-star rating, but every single podcast is doing that, and most of the other podcasts have a B-list comedian on them. Like, the vast majority of them have, like, Karen Kilgariff or Paul Scheer or Jason Manzoukas or something.
Oh, well, essentially, you need enough 5 stars to tip you over into the recommended category.
Yeah, and there are thousands of people who have thousands more than we do. Word of mouth is what I like.
I love word of mouth. Mm-hmm. And also spaghetti. I love spaghetti.
But, John, I'm afraid that someone may have touched your spaghetti.
Oh, no. Someone touch my spaghetti? Guys, this has been memes. This has been meme mastery. Thank you so much for listening. We will be back in 2 weeks with more Movie Mastery. But until then, you have a good one.